Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Guest today, Hema Reddy. Hema, please tell us where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with Crafty Counter.
Well, thank you, Matt, for having me on this podcast. Yeah, I'm calling from sunny Austin, Texas.
Amazing.
My name is Hema Reddy. I'm the founder and CEO of Crafty Counter, and we make delicious, simple, nutritious, plant-based egg substitutes that are sold all over the country in every state in America.
That's incredible. And I guess tell me a little bit about your background leading up to founding this brand. I mean, you know, what did you kind of see out there in the market as far as an issue that, you know, maybe wasn't being solved for consumers already that, you know, caused you to want to create a brand like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my background is in technology. So I was at IBM for 15 years and I quit. I really wanted to start a company that's based on mission and purpose and a way to give back to people and communities around us. And in the process, leave a better planet for the next generation. With that underlying premise, I started Crafty Counter with a few products that were bringing more vegetables into people's lives. So we started off in 2018 with Wonder Nuggets. It was a blended chicken and vegetable and chickpeas based nugget. So that, you know, great way, crafty way to sneak in vegetables into a consumer's plate. And then we pivoted in 2020 after I realized that this was not enough. The impact had to be much larger. So we pivoted to 100% plant-based company. So I became vegan in 2020, especially after the pandemic hit. And I realized something had to change. I can't be part of the problem anymore. We have to be a part of the solution. So my whole family went on a plant-based diet. And that's when I realized, well, why isn't there more egg substitutes? There's a lot of alternatives for, say, hot dogs and sandwiches and patties via beef and chicken and seafood and vegan cheeses and so on. But the category of eggs just sorely lacked innovation, a lack of variety, choices. There was only one market leader. And that's when we launched the world's first plant-based hard-boiled eggs called Wonder Eggs into all regions and all stores of Whole Foods. And it has been an incredible ride, you know, today.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so suppose, you know, obviously it sounds like you're operating mostly in retail these days. Is that where you got your start too? Did you start selling online and then move to retail? Or can you tell me a little bit about that story, how you got, you know, so involved with the wholesale and retail market?
Yeah, sure thing. So we have a small online presence. So it's less than 5% of our total revenue. Mm-hmm. Most of our market is in retail. Now, that's not to say that we won't increase the channel mix of revenue that we generate from online sales, but it's just a matter of driving brand recognition for our product. It's very important for people to like buy a bag and try it before they buy, say, a six-pack online. Right. For e-commerce and the unit economics to work, you can't just ship out one bag of refrigerated product because there's a container, the foam containers, there's gel packs, and the shipping is more for, you know, refrigerated products. So it had to be something where, you know, it had to be multi-pack unit. So the retail launch was a part of driving trial and discovery and, you know, just brand awareness. And then at some point that has automatically led to online sales as well, even though we don't invest much into it in terms of like Facebook ads or paid advertising or so on. We still get a lot of native organic traffic just because of our retail presence.
Yeah, that's awesome. And do you operate on any other kind of like digital channels? I mean, I'm not really doing any paid marketing, which makes sense because it doesn't sound like, you know, it's a super big priority since you're doing so much business on the retail side. But do you do anything other kind of campaigns? Like, are you big on social media? Do you have like a big social media following? Or what kind of other channels do you operate in online that maybe also might be driving traffic to that 5%? I'm just curious.
So the main thing that we have going on for us is the product is so unique and differentiated. Mm. The consumers love it because they find out about the product. First of all, it's just so interesting. It's so innovative, right? So a hard-boiled egg made from almonds and cashews and coconut. And so when a consumer comes across it, and this consumer is right now on a plant-based journey or trying to mix things up, they're not necessarily vegans or vegetarians, but they understand that they need to have more plants in their daily lifestyle. And so because of that entry point into that buyer's journey, they come across this product and they are very skeptical. They're like, I don't know, how is it going to taste? This just sounds so weird. And they take a bite of it, and the taste and the texture and the sensory experience is so on point that they are just wowed. So because of that wow effect, or because of nostalgia for somebody that hasn't had an egg in a few years, or have an allergy, they are just so amazed by the value of what they just ate. They just turn to social media to organically post about it. So we do have an Instagram channel and a TikTok channel. And so we have a lot of people commenting or just using the hashtag WonderX or just are referencing our Instagram handle of at MyCraftyCounter. So because of that, we get a lot of organic traffic. So I would say in terms of social media channels, Instagram is our largest traffic. But at the same time on TikTok, there's thousands of videos, or on YouTube, there's lots of videos, and none of these are paid, or we haven't like had an influencer, you know, campaign where we pay an influencer to make a review for us. This has all been organic, and it's all because we've just found the early signs of a product market fit.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you actually semi-answered another question that I wanted to ask you, which was I was curious. I know it can be a little bit more difficult, you know, finding direct like consumer data and like kind of habitual data doing so much retail. But from what you could tell, I mean, you find that most of your customers are not necessarily already, you know, vegans or vegetarians, but that they're like kind of on a journey of just like looking for alternatives mm-hmm. and maybe, you know, like taking the first step. And so is that kind of what you find? Is it then that it's definitely not mostly vegans buying? It's mostly people that are kind of either like curious about vegan options or maybe like just really early on that journey?
I would say it's a combination of both of those brackets of consumers. It's hard to pinpoint how many because we just don't have the data to find out if there's more vegans or vegetarians or just flexitarians right. who are more diet conscious and just are believe in sustainability or mindful to the body. I don't have the ratio per se, but as we grow, I think we'll get some more granularity into that data set. This time, though, we just see a lot of tags coming primarily from vegans or vegetarians or mixed households, where mm-hmm. one person is probably not wanting to support any animal-based products, and the other person is. And so then that becomes the even more interesting and fun, you know, content or video or testimonial, because you see both points of view. Like, hey, honey, look at what I'm eating. And then, you know, if the husband is just like a vegan and the wife or the partner eats the egg then the partner is like, what? That is crazy. I wouldn't have been able to tell if he didn't tell me at a time. So yeah, it's a combination.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And so I guess I'm curious, you know, obviously I've spoken to a few other, you know, kind of plant-based brands, like plant-based alternative brands, even on the podcast. I don't think they've posted mm-hmm. yet, but you'll probably see them soon. And, you know, I'm always curious, like what kind of led you to the decision and wanting to get into this space, you know, in doing like a, you know, direct alternative to like a non-vegan food that exists rather than maybe going down the path of, you know, creating something that's just not necessarily like an alternative to a food, but just like a more of like an original recipe for like just kind of like a mix or something like that. What kind of led you to go down this path with eggs? And I know the original brand was something different, but what kind of led you down this path specifically? I'm curious.
Yeah, it's the applying the lens of pragmatism and practicality to your passion and impact goals. The two have to merge. The two have to align. Passion alone cannot move the needle unless you empower egg with a practical way to accomplish those goals. So to me, when you want to move the needle, the product has to sell. The household penetration matters, right? The consumer adoption matters. Mm-hmm. So in order for the consumer adoption to happen, you have to first cut through the noise. There's so much innovation happening. There's so many products and options available, right? So the first element is, how does the product speak for itself and organically become viral? So that was the first goal. So it had to be something so unique, so disruptive that somebody hears about it and they're like, okay, I'm going to check that out. That sounds, you know, very different. So there's a curiosity element to it, right? So that's the reason why I consciously, you know, went with hard-boiled eggs, because it doesn't exist in the entire world. Even today, there is no other plant-based egg substitute that is hard-boiled, sold anywhere. Now, there are other countries that have tried, but they couldn't quite nail it. And so they had to, you know, just shut it down. Versus we are just continuously growing. We went to 1,000 stores, 0 to 1,000 stores in a matter of a year. And now we're going to double, if not triple, our distribution this year. So that is a testament to the fact that the market and the consumer is ready, right? The second thing is that it has to be a viable business in a growing category. So if you think about, if you just go back to like 15 years ago, let's just say soy milk, right, that this company Silk used to make. There was one shelf, one facing in the entire dairy milk, you know, part of the store. And before you know, that one shelf went into more footprint. Non-dairy milk now captures more footprint than dairy milk. So that's how fast the category has grown in less than 10 to 15 years. $500,000 of sales for plant-based meat now are over 2 billion in a matter of 10 years, between 2012 to 2022. So
that's
that
amazing.
Is just, yeah. So it's like a small category starts from that and then just doubles, triples, quadruples. So plant-based egg is going to grow the same trajectory because every other category has had seen that same meteoric rise and growth year over year, but eggs have been stagnant. There's one market leader called Eat Just, and they made about $44 million in sales in 2022, right? I'm not sure what the last year's sales was, but that's my last reference point. So there is room for this category to continue to grow. So I feel we're just at the, you know, start of that journey. So going into a category that has the ability to explode also makes business sense to give a good ROI to our investors. So those are the two primary factors, right? Of course, and the third is always the purpose, right? We are trying to save the chicks. The male chicks are really culled every year, millions of them, either gassed or thrown into a grinder alive. Those cute baby head chicks that you see in pictures, right? That is happening around the world, and it's very less known on the animal cruelty or how the birds are treated around the world, because 95% of eggs are factory farmed. And so what that means is that these birds don't have the room to move around in the cage, and they're only raised as breeding, waste for eggs. And so they live a lot of time span. They're heavy. They can't walk. Their legs are, much slimmer because the body is so heavy, because they're fed with all these things that are accelerating the growth so they can breed more eggs. The whole process is just really unkind to the birds. So, the third element is let's just give our chickens a break. Reduce our dependency on eggs. If they're humanely raised kind eggs growing in a pasture and they're giving eggs as a natural way of birthing, that's fine. And if somebody wants to consume those eggs, more power to them. But, this whole factory farming element is just so, so bad. And there's a reason why bird flu keeps happening, right? Every time a bird flu hits, there's billions of dollars that the government has to spend. Not millions, billions. So what is the point of all of this? So realizing all of these three, ways we can make an impact and move the needle, while also understanding that the consumer is not going to suddenly stop eating eggs. I couldn't. I miss them so much. I wanted my eggs. I'm like, I can't do without eggs. So, I went and created these hard-boiled eggs. So the consumer is not going to stop eating eggs. So the solution has to meet the desire and then market need. And that's what we're doing here.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And I love that answer. I feel like it's obviously something you've thought about in depth, every part of that. So I appreciate the insights and your passion on that. And so I guess this kind of leads me to another thing. Obviously, whenever you're making a vegan product that's very mission-based like you are, and made out of like a real passion, obviously consumer education is going to be a big part of, what makes your brand successful and what keeps people coming back. How do you kind of grapple with that? I mean, between, maybe something you have on the packaging. I know a lot of brands have like QR codes to links to like, informative articles and things like that based on what the product is. How do you kind of grapple with the consumer education aspect of what you're doing to, inform people as to, the kind of the why of the company and the brand?
Yeah, great question. So on the back of our pack, on the tray sleeves, we've got six hard-boiled eggs in a tray that are vacuum skin packed, and there's a tree that goes around the tray. There is a story of where we started, cool. 2018, 2019, 2020, all the way to 2023. There's a story of all these phases of our journey, and it explains on our point of view. And everything that we do is a journey. It's never a destination, right? How do we get to be where we are, and what are the factors that led to that growth? So it talks about that journey. I believe we used to have, actually, yeah, we still have a QR code, I think. I don't know. Let me just grab this one second real quick here. Let's see. Yeah, we do have a QR code right there, cool. In the back.
Very cool.
Right there. And it goes to the recipes page because, hey, what are all the things you can make? Deviled eggs, egg salad sandwiches. And there's so many fun things that you can make. Breakfast sandwiches.
Because you have recipes and stuff, a link to that too.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, very cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we do have that, a way to drive offline trial to online, purchase.
Yeah, that and I feel like that definitely helps too, because I feel like one of the big roadblocks I feel like for a lot of people who are maybe like a flexitarian or like very new and trying like plant-based alternative products is like not being sure how they fit into like the regular ways that they cook, because not everybody's, obviously not everybody's just eating eggs by themselves or eating anything by themselves. It's usually part of something larger. So that's quite savvy. I like that. I'm sure that gets a lot of traffic. The QR code with the recipes, I certainly would. So let me just ask you this one thing. I always love to ask everybody that comes on the podcast, if you watch any of mine. You'll see that I was asked this question. I'm just always curious, if you go back to the inception of the brand when you started, obviously knowing everything you know now, getting huge into retail, and everything else you learned along the way. If you can go back and give yourself one piece of advice if you were to start again, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say always plan for it to take, I don't know, 2 or 3 times as long and a lot more capital investment. If you're prepared for that, it doesn't surprise you just quite as much. It just takes longer to build a brand and build a business. Don't just get starstruck by those unicorn brands that just seem to have an overnight success. It takes time
Right.
and patience. So mentally preparing yourself to the fact that it is going to take a while to build and rebuild and pivot and learn and iterate is something that I would have prepared myself for earlier. This is something I found out as I went along that, okay, we have to pivot. Oh, wow, all this capital investment that's required. So that's one thing that I would really, dwell on before to myself about 5 years ago.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. It's a very common answer I hear from, other CPG brands that I talk to, as you could probably imagine. The biggest commonality is in what you said first, which is just that, like, it's going to take a lot longer than you think. It's a slow burn, but you have to be able to go through those times and do the R&D and do all the necessary things on the front end to make sure that you're sustainable going forward. Like what you have, cultivated here now, being in thousands and thousands of stores and still having an online presence and all those things. So that's really interesting, and I think it's definitely a shared experience. So I know a lot of entrepreneurs naturally can feel kind of like they're on an island when they're going through, big issues, whether it's with funding or whatever it is. It's one of the things I love doing about this podcast, is I find so much commonality in answers to that question. And a lot of people give us feedback and say, like, I thought I was the only person going through this. And then like every other person that comes on kind of answers that question very similarly. So I think it just helps to find commonality between entrepreneurs that are in similar stages with their businesses. So I appreciate that answer. And yeah, I guess just last thing, I just want to give you an opportunity to just kind of plug your website, let people know anybody's interested in maybe potentially partnering with you from a business perspective, or just interested in the brand, just to buy and try. Let people know how to stay in touch with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Our website is called craftycounter.com. That is CraftyCounter.com. Our Instagram handle, TikTok handle is at mycraftycounter. So please do engage with us. We love hearing from anybody and everybody, and we're here to answer questions and share more about what we're doing. Find us on. We're always active on social media, so definitely reach out to us if you want to connect with me directly. The best way would be LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn a lot, so just find me on LinkedIn, send me a message, and we'll see what we can do.
Awesome. Love that. Well, Hema, I just want to say thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate your time and your insights. I love what you're doing. I love your passion. And I just want to wish you the best of luck and continued success. And yeah, thank you again so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, you take care, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, Hema. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.